average person.
Right.
You go back to 1789, this is the case. I mean, liberalism, it's a faith-based ideology. And what is the idea?
Very good.
What is the idea? The idea is that they will be so effective that they will provide better economic growth than socialist, democratic-inspired places, and they will render the social democratic safety net so cheap the state doesn't even have to provide it. Okay, I mean, we know that they're not producing the growth like China. We know that the social safety net in places like America, it's going to bankrupt you, and that's what Macron is trying to bring to France: make the social democratic safety net expensive to privatize it. So they're so far away from these goals. What I just said, they never say it in public. They never say that liberal democracy is going to beat social democracy in terms of growth and in terms of the social safety net. But that's really what this conflict is. And that's a historical conflict that goes back to 1789, the move away from monarchy and towards citizen empowerment. That's what modern politics is, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not one guy in charge. It's the people in charge. And this is what we have been fighting for. And liberal democracy, it's this intermediate step, but there is no intermediate. Liberal democracy is autocracy. They work with monarchs. They work with oligarchs. They don't care about the working poor class. They don't care about the democratic class. This is not the case in Iran. This is not the case in China. This is not the case in Cuba. These countries that are inspired by socialist democracy. They're not hardcore communist states. Nobody is, but they're inspired by socialist democracy as opposed to being inspired by liberal democracy.
Right.
Liberal democracy, I'd be all for it if it just wasn't this collective historical catastrophe. The only time they succeeded was after the bloodletting, the horrors of World War I and World War II.
Correct.
When finally Westerners said, you are discredited morally and economically. You have caused the Great Depression. You have caused the Holocaust. You have caused, the horrors of imperialism. Finally, 1945 to 75, the working class, unions, grassroots groups finally got some control. But that's what neoliberalism is. It's the end of that. It's the rolling back of that. It's going back to the liberalism is always just liberalism. It's not neoliberalism. It's just liberalism.
Right.
It's this is just a brand change. So
right. So Rami, let's look into the future a little bit. You mentioned what might happen in terms of the presidential elections in the future. So let's very quickly summarize. So we have this kind of media ruling elite that. Brings out these media personalities and makes them the king who rules by decree.
Yeah.
They don't report on what's really happening to normal people. They don't talk about the protest. They don't talk about what's really important. As you said, they focus on wedge issues, as they used to call them in the States, like Burkini and stuff
Burkini
like that.
Yeah, Burkini in France.
Right. Now, one would argue that this is not sustainable. That you can maybe do this, for 10, 20, maybe even 30 years, but at some point, something's going to give.
Inshallah. God willing.
Yes. And you're saying that
they keep abusing people.
Right. And you're even saying that even somebody like Marine Le Pen, who has this image of being anti-establishment or being sovereignty, wanting to bring back the sovereignty of France and French nationalism and French power. Even a person like her, she's not going to be able to do anything about it.
She's not going to.
So I want to spend a little time. We have about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Let's try to think a little bit about the future. We always try to do that on Insight. To at the end of the program, try to, after all the analysis of what the present or the past was, the history was, to maybe look a little bit in the future. So if you could please get us started. How do you see the future in France, particularly?
Can they do what comes after the yellow vests? After 6 months of bloodletting every Saturday, where the Paris is locked down, huge swaths of Paris are locked down, and everybody's trying to pretend that as though this is normal, pretend that as though this is democratic. How much worse can it get than yellow vests? The yellow vests are unparalleled in Western modern history. You have to go back to the interwar period. I mean, I think we should really sort of, start there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's next is opening live fire. That's live fire on their own people.
Exactly.
And once they do that, then things are going to change. But I think that's really the only way the West, which has always been against socialist-inspired democracy and pro-liberal democracy, that's the only way things are going to change. The West is just so dysfunctional in their individualism, in their imperialism, in their arrogance, in their refusal to allow a country like Cuba to go their own way without a blockade, or a country like Iran to go their own way without, you know, horrific sanctions. What's going to shake them into realizing that liberal democracy is ruled by the 1%, just as it was in 1851, the French knew this, and they voted Louis Napoleon in power. He was an elected monarch, right, at a time when there was no such thing as an elected monarch. Napoleon was elected. The French people, they were grasping about, well, we have monarchy, but it's not good. Well, what if we vote him in? Well, let's try liberalism. Okay, no good. You know, and then socialist democracy came along, and that's the battle, socialist democracy versus the oligarchy of liberal democracy. This is the battle. Where is France going to go? Down.
Because it
down.
Seems to me that there's no political mechanism to be able to make that shift.
Yeah.
There's nobody right now, as you were saying, neither on the right nor on the left, whatever those terms mean.
Totally discredited.
Yeah.
Yes.
There doesn't seem to be any way out for a person to be able to, through their vote, through voting, idea that if you vote, everything, you know, heaven is going to happen.
Even if there was a Khomeini, a Castro, a unifying figure.
Right.
You are talking about then, I assume, on an EU level, because that's all that matters now.
Right.
On a French level, I mean, because France is in the EU, they have the euro, they've given away all of their sovereignty, both political and economic. A place like Hungary, they have the forints. They have some sovereignty.
They're still trying to maintain some level
they
of
have some sovereignty.
Sovereignty.
They have some levers to pull. So, I mean, are we talking about like a pan-European sovereign? You know, something that I wanted to, you know, tell you, you know, although I'm sure you know, but it's just interesting. The average person wants a pan-European project. They want peace.
Right.
That's what you
exactly.
Were,
yeah, yeah.
They
mean,
want peace. Yeah. They want freedom of movement, you
right.
know, and they want stability and they want democracy. So the pan-European project, I mean, you can say that it's prevented war, but at what price? What do you call
exactly.
the yellow vests? That's domestic war. So where is, going back to your question, where is France going? France is going where the EU takes it, and the EU, they are going to keep pushing austerity. France just, you know, they just came out just this, you know, last week that they're going to cut social spending. At this time of where you have the economic crisis pre-corona, the crisis of corona, and now the crisis created by sanctioning Russia, they're going to reduce social services. When inflation is the highest in 30 years, they're going to reduce help to the average person. If they did that in Iran, it would never even be possible. They would never even discuss it. If they tried to do that in China, it would never happen because of their structures. The,
right.
the structures of these, the political structures forbid it. They have something to say. The 1% has to be, we cannot only do what they want. You
Correct.
Know what I mean? So where is it going? It's more... As long as they keep following liberal democracy, which refuses to listen to the demands of the working poor, and this is just it's proof with the yellow vest, it's only going to get more unequal. It's only going to keep failing.
What I'm hearing, what you're saying, is that I think this idea that maybe there will be a Frexit, a French exit, because, you know, one could have argued if the nationalist parties had maintained that, if Marine Le Pen had maintained that policy, and if she was going to become president,
but she dropped it. She wanted to be in the mainstream. She saw she was going
right.
to get, you know. Yeah.
So maybe that's the key, that the idea which you were talking about, the idea of the whole idea of France, which is such a central part of the European integration project, because
totally.
The whole idea was
You're
that
precisely right.
we should never have France and Germany go to war again. Let's bind them together in this union.
And that's in my book, how France has pushed
right.
for a pan-European project, but not based around Germanic economics. Around French economics,
right.
mixed economy, not necessarily massive state ownership, but some state ownership and state direction. But the European Union is English parliamentarianism, oligarchic parliamentarianism, the House of Lords combined with Germanic economic theories.
Right.
So it's this double autocracy, and France has been trying to convince.
Right.
Why did Mitterrand make the U-turn to convince Germany to push the Pan-European project?
Correct.
Why did Hollande make the U-turn to convince Germany to stay, you know, in the Pan-European project? This is what the last 200 years of European history is, trying to convince the monarchical Germanic peoples and the English to try and come together on the basis of liberty, equality, fraternity, solidarity. So staying on France, I think that they're exhausted after the Yellow Vest. This is maybe, as a reporter, I don't know. I mean, you know, famously, you know, you cannot predict revolutions, but France was in a revolutionary condition, you know, for 6 months.
Right.
November 2018, I mean, it was there, it was ripe, it didn't happen. They're in a period now, I think, of counter-revolution. That's what happens. I think, you know, because we have to talk again about the European project. France is one state and among the 27. It's going to have to be some other country where they get the revolutionary spirit. I don't, but at the same time, maybe, you know, the Yellow Vest experience shows to France what it should.
Right.
That Macron, the mainstream parties, liberalism has to go. You know, that there has to be a place for the grassroots point of view. There has to be, the agenda has to be centered around the working poor and the working class, the mass right. majority. I don't know. Where do you think it's going to go?
I mean, like we were saying, I think there's nobody really right now that is even talking about these issues within the political system, the party system, the political mechanism. Because, as always, this is something that history teaches us. Whatever is happening socially or economically, there has to be some sort of reflection of that within the political system.
But where is it in Europe?
Exactly.
Where is it?
No, nowhere.
Okay, so let's stick with that. So it's not going to show
it's
up.
Not
it's
happen.
In the structures,
right.
structures right. of the Eurozone. You have to look at, for example, here's something that you never hear about.
And by the way, just to add to it, this is why you see in Britain this Brexit happening somewhere.
Mm.
With all, you can agree or disagree, but the point is simply that this was a reaction. The people in Britain feeling that they're completely, powerless in what's happening.
Not economically, they had the pound.
Right, and then suddenly going into doing the Brexit.
One thing my book talks about is go back to 2016. That was the, you know, part, that was during the European, migrant crisis. And then combined with the crisis of austerity, that there was just constant protests. Back when the Brexit vote happened, the UK is looking over at the continent and seeing Spain is in chaos, France is in chaos.
Exactly.
Everything is economically, politically, culturally. It was a smart thing for them, you know.
Right.
They see that the Pan-European project, I'm not against it, but this version of it has failed to bring prosperity,
right.
stability, democracy. So that's why it happened. And then they are falsely, you know, portrayed as being right-wing racists.
Correct.
Just like the, you know, Yellow Vests. But the French are just, the French culture is far more to the left than UK culture. So you can't say that about the Yellow Vests at all.
Ramin Mazari, thank you so much for our conversation. Until the next time on Insight.
Thank you.
So what insight did we gain from our conversation with Ramin Mazari? France is experiencing a deep social and political crisis. Following the Lisbon Treaty and in the context of European integration, a loss of national sovereignty has occurred in which the power of the national government is limited to the imposition of austerity measures in order to remain in good standing with the EU and the global financial and banking system. Like in most other European countries, political parties and currents in France have lost credibility with the voters, as the traditional left-wing and right-wing parties abandoned their core beliefs and supporters and morphed into cynical neoliberal elite parties, virtually indistinguishable from one another. Traditional working-class voters increasingly voted for nationalist parties and currents. But as the last presidential elections in France showed, even these parties are dropping some of their core beliefs like Euroscepticism and adopting positions to attract voters in order to maintain whatever power they have gained in the preceding years. The presidency of Emmanuel Macron has become the symbol of this artificially imposed neoliberal order on a population which consistently rejects most of the austerity agenda being imposed, regularly protests this state of affairs in the streets, and continues to vote for anti-establishment parties. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time on Insight.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قال للملأ حوله إن هذا لساحر عليم.
Pharaoh said to the eminent ones around him, "Indeed, this is a learned magician."
يريد أن يخرجكم من أرضكم بسحره فماذا تأمرون.
He wants to drive you out of your land by his magic. So what do you advise?
As you were with us, dear listeners, previously we were discussing the 34th and 35th verses of this chapter Shu'ara. قَالَ لِلْمَلَئِ حَوْلَهُ إِنَّ هَذَا لَسَاحِرٌ عَلِيمٌ. Pharaoh said to the chiefs around him, "Verily, this is a skilled sorcerer, يُرِيدُ أَن يُخْرِجَكُم مِّنْ أَرْضِكُمْ, who intends to drive you out of your land with his sorcery, بِسِحْرِهِ, فَمَاذَا تَأْمُرُونَ. So, what do you command?" So, when Moses brought forth these two miracles, I mean, casting down the rod and then it being changed into a great serpent, and of course, bringing out his hand, shining white, the first thing that Pharaoh does is that he says to the companions that Moses is a very skillful and knowing wizard, forgetting about the fact that he had previously accused him with being mad. And then Pharaoh, in order to mobilize the audience against Moses, continues, يُرِيدُ أَن يُخْرِجَكُم مِّنْ أَرْضِكُم بِسِحْرِهِ, who intends to drive you out of your land with his sorcery. فَمَاذَا تَأْمُرُونَ. So what do you command? This is that very Pharaoh who knew all the territory of Egypt as his very own sovereignty and was saying, "Is not mine the sovereignty of Egypt and these rivers flowing under me? Can you not then discern?" But now that he saw his government was going to be overthrown, he totally forgot his exclusive rulership of this region, and he counted it as people's property and implied that their country was facing danger and they had to find a way to defend it. Pharaoh, who did not listen to anyone's words 1 hour ago and was always an unrestrained ruler and no one could oppose him, was now so miserable that he told his companions to provide a command. He is asking for others for help. He demands a humble and hopeless counseling. It is understood from the other verses of the Holy Quran, like the 110th verse of chapter A'raf, that the companions started counseling and they were so panicked that they could not think. And every one of them asked one another, "Now what do you command? What do you think?" So this is the tradition of all oppressors in all ages. When they can control everything, they count everything as their own property and everyone as their own slaves. When they see that their tyrannical kingdom is going to be subdued and it is in danger, they abandon their previous method and they resort to people and their opinions. They count country as people's country, everything as the property of people, and they respect people's opinions. But when the storm abates, they return to their previous behaviors. على مر الزمان تألقا
وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter. حفظ
الكتاب بصدره فبدا وضيئا كالنجوم تألقا وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Up to now, dear listeners, we have seen how Pharaoh reacted to Moses in different situations. At first, he tried to belittle and abase Moses. He says, أَلَمْ نُرَبِّكَ فِينَا وَلِيدًا. We were the ones who cherished you among us. Then he mocked him. إِنَّكَ لَمَجْنُونَ. You are of the madman. And then he threatened him. إِنْ لَأَجْعَلَنَّكَ مِنَ الْمَسْجُونِينَ. I will certainly imprison you. Then accusing him with being a sorcerer. إِنَّ هَذَا لَسَاحِرٌ عَلِيمٌ. You are a very skillful sorcerer. And now he charges Moses with conspiracy. يُرِيدُ أَن يُخْرِجَكُم مِّنْ أَرْضِكُمْ. He wants to drive you people out of your land. And this is how the ruthless oppressors react to pure logic and arguments. And now, in our time, in our age, we also see that many kings and rulers counted all country as their own property. When everything is good and okay, they even ordered those who opposed them to leave the country and said that a lost land is vast and they could go anywhere. And they used to say, "This is our order and no one can disobey it." But now they are totally diminished. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا O you who believe, اِسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Respected brothers and sisters, we've gathered here for the commemoration of the Shahada of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. May Allah reward you all. And now today we get a chance to, inshallah, look at the topic that we've chosen, which is leading a lifestyle of Imam Hussein, or leading a Husseini life. So tonight, inshallah, I want to talk about lifestyle and the importance of lifestyle. We recite Ziyarat Ashura. What do we say in that Ziyarat? Allahumma al mahyana mahya Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad. Wa mamatana mamata Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad. O Allah, make our lives be the lives of the Ahlul Bayt. Make our death be the death of the Ahlul Bayt. Sometimes we focus on just the last part of that. We want to die like they did. I don't know if you've seen, sometimes there's this quote, this saying, you know, live like Ali and die like Hussein. I don't know if you've seen that before. Yeah? Now, I don't know where that came from, but of course, you know, we want to live like Ali and we want to die like Hussein. But is there something wrong with living like Hussein and dying like Ali, or living like Hassan and dying like, let's say, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam? Of course not. We know that all of these individuals are Nurun Wahid. And that saying isn't from hadith. That saying somebody came up with, it sounds nice, whatever it may be. But in hadith we're told what? Allahumma ja'al mahyana mahya Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad, wa mamatana mamata Muhammadin. Make our lives be the lives of Muhammad and his family. Make our death be their death. In one hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says that, do not be deceived by the way that people pray and they fast. Sometimes we think that, okay, Islam is about, you know, making sure we do our ibadat. Okay, that's very important. As-salatu umud ad-din. Salat is the pillar, it's the foundation. Fasting is wajib. Kutiba alaykum as-siyam and all these things. But the Imam says, don't be deceived by that. Don't think that Islam is summarized and summed up in just these practices. No, but rather you should go and see how are these people when it comes to what? Two things. One of them is Sidqul Hadith wa Ada'ul Amana. Meaning go and see what kind of people these are. Are they people who have do they have like a value of being truthful in their lives? Do they have a value of being trustworthy people in their lives? Those are the people who truly are Muslim. Those are the people who truly are our followers. And so many other ahadith and even ayat of the Quran which tell us that there's something about the way that we live our lives that we have to pay attention to. I want to give you an example from the society we live in. Because, you know, lifestyle is something, one of the nice things that happened in recent times is that there's a lot more emphasis on your being able to choose your own lifestyle. There's a lot more. It's not like, you know, there's a lot, people are a lot more accepting these days if you choose, you know, to do things in a different way. You know, and maybe that can be abused for some people, but in a way it gives us a nice space. You know, we are able to say that, okay, well, I'm part of the American society, but I am choosing my own lifestyle. That's something which is good. But one of the things we have to be aware of is that even though we have our choice of lifestyle, we also are very much influenced by certain things in our society. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is because if we want to be able to change, we have to have awareness. We have to know what's going on. I want to give you an example. It's something that I find interesting. It's that of architecture. If you compare Islamic architecture to what we have in this society, there's a lot of differences. And they've done some studies on this. They say that when you go and study the way that traditionally Muslims have built homes throughout the centuries, you see that there's three qualities that are demonstrated by the homes that they build. One of them is that they reflect the value of privacy. Number two is modesty, and number three is hospitality. Okay, privacy, how? They say that in traditional Muslim homes, there would always be like four levels of privacy. One level of privacy for the individual themselves. There's certain things that we need to do. We need to be doing that in private. Then there's a level of privacy of the family itself. They want to be together. And then there's a level of privacy for the female members of the household. And then there's a level of privacy for the male members of the household. And it's amazing to what extent they went to ensure that all four of these levels of privacy were maintained. Sometimes, for example, they would have, you know, traditionally they would have the outer courtyard. And part of that was to be able to allow for this type of privacy to have that, you know, to make sure that's instituted. Then you have modesty. Traditionally, they would never build homes in a way where the windows and the doors would face one another, one home and the other home. They would be staggered. They would measure and they would see that, okay, if somebody is standing on the ground and we're up here, then how does the window have to be? How like low can it go in order to make sure that, you know, the sight is blocked from somebody who is standing there? They would actually look at the angles and they would look at these types of things. And then hospitality, right? Because Islam emphasizes this idea that your home is supposed to be something where it's not just for you. You share the blessings. You invite others and they bring even more barakah and risk to your home. So they would actually have these special areas that it would be something they would spend time in making sure that those who came would feel very comfortable. And those of you who, if you travel and you go and spend time in some of these older homes, you can almost feel like a type of different sense in there. There's a peace that you feel. Even the way that they design them, I mean, I don't have time to talk about all the details, but even let's say you look and see, how is it that the sun flows in and fills the rooms with light? There's a special attention given to that. It has a spiritual effect. Now you compare that to home building, let's say, you know, in our society. Okay, what is it? You know, what is reflected in the values there? There's a huge emphasis on what? On function, on, you know, doing things in a way where it's profitable, on doing things in like mass production. And all these three things, privacy, no. Okay, modesty, no. And then even hospitality these days, like you can barely squeeze like, you know, yourself in the living room, let alone another family, or if you want to make it, you know, a bigger thing. Right? Why? Right? Why? Because there's certain values in the society which show themselves even in the way that homes are built. Now, brothers and sisters, like this is an important discussion. Why? Because when we start to look at other aspects of our life, we start to see that, you know what, I am Muslim, but am I even aware of how I should be leading my life? Or am I just taking what the normal way of doing things is and I'm applying them to my life? And maybe that's where I need to look and improve. We have examples of this. We have people, for example, who are depressed in our communities. It's a huge problem. And they come and they say that, well, what dua can we make? What special amal? Why am I, what is the sin that I'm committing that I'm doing my wajibat, I'm trying, but I'm still depressed? And sometimes those who, you know, they try to help them, they use their knowledge to address their problems. Those who look at their problems from a holistic perspective, they give them guidance. They say that the problem that they have, it goes down to lifestyle choices. Why are they sleeping that way? Why are they eating that way? Why are they doing that to their bodies? If they were to pay more attention, if they didn't just do what everyone else does, they would realize that these are the problems, these are the causes for the problems that they're facing. It goes back to what? Lifestyle choices. We have a huge problem in our community of families breaking up. Sometimes it's shocking, years after the marriage, you know, happens, and you know, they're talking about like separating. What's going on here? Right? And you go and you say, okay, they're both practicing, they're both committed. And you see that, well, what lifestyle do they lead? What kind of conversation do they have? Do they have conversations at home? How do they spend time together at dinner time? Do they spend time, or is it time that's spent everyone on their own device? Right? These are things which might seem trivial, but these are things which can break a relationship. And then we realize, well, oh, you know what? I didn't realize. I was just taking the predominant lifestyle that I learned from the society I live in, and I was applying that to my life, and I was thinking that that's the way to do things.
I swear to Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
In the limelight.
Rates of anxiety and depression have decreased since first year of the coronavirus pandemic, but there are still aren't enough psychiatrists and therapists for millions of American patients. We now present you an article written by Eric Berger. The piece is titled, A Collective Trauma, COVID Keeps Its Grip on Mental Health of Many American Patients. Eric Wood, a mental health professional who leads virtual support groups for Indiana judges and attorneys, can look at a screen full of heads nodding in reaction to what someone said and know that the meeting is providing some relief for participants who have struggled during the COVID-19 pandemic. Eric Wood, who lives in Indianapolis, can also see how his wife, Diane Keller Wood, has made gradual improvements in her recovery from long COVID's significant effects on her mental and physical well-being. Eric Wood, a clinical case manager for the Indiana Judges and Lawyers Assistance Program, said, "This was probably me being more of a therapist than a husband, but I was really trying to get her to focus on the positive aspects and not to see everything with kind of a negative filter." He added, "And then eventually she started coming home from doctor's appointments saying, you know, I think I'm getting better." Still, Diane Keller Wood and the jurist, like millions of other Americans, have not fully recovered from the mental health problems connected to the COVID-19 pandemic and the surrounding societal upheaval over the last 2.5 years. While there are indications that at least among U.S. adults, the rates of anxiety and depression have decreased from the spike seen during the first year of the pandemic. They still remain higher than before COVID, and there still aren't enough psychiatrists and therapists. In short, while the pandemic is no longer the top story in the news each night, its ripple effects remain top of the mind for many Americans. Roxanne Cohen-Silver, a University of California at Irvine psychologist who has described the pandemic as a collective trauma, said, "In addition to those who died from COVID or lost a loved one to the virus, there are personal stressors that people have had to encounter on and off with restrictions in their activities, on and off with the possibility of getting ill. And all of those things have now been chronic." According to the National Center for Health Statistics, in 2019, 11% of American adults in the United States reported symptoms of anxiety and depression. In January of 2021, the number was 41%. A year later, it had fallen to 32%, which was still significantly higher than before the COVID pandemic. Before the pandemic, the Lawyers Association program operated monthly support groups for people struggling with problems such as addiction or grief. When much of the country entered lockdown because of the virus, the organization launched a weekly program, Connection Group, to help people grapple with the isolation. Wood said, "We have got some folks in the group that identify themselves as extroverts, and the pandemic was particularly difficult for them," adding, "Working from home really changed their sense of activity with other people. Conversations were cut. Anything social was just gone out of their lives," Wood said. But even one of the litigators started again working in person. Their mental health challenges did not evaporate. In some cases, they got worse. Eric Wood noted, "When people started returning to the offices, attorneys in particular were just starting to fall apart," adding, "Substance use for many really went out of control over the two-year period. Depressive disorders also are on the rise." Eric Wood added, "Still, despite the mounting concerns and the novelty of meeting virtually, the support groups appear to work. People who previously might not have driven 2 hours to attend a support group could now do so from the comfort of their homes." Eric Wood added, "The Connections Group has created its own kind of sense of community. We have had people that came in when a crisis was particularly relevant for them, and then things settled down, and then they stopped coming to group, but it's really met a need." Once COVID restrictions eased, Eric Wood and his colleagues considered stopping the Connections Group or meeting less regularly, but participants asked to keep the same schedule. After many people had stopped worrying about COVID, Diane Keller Wood, a hearing aid attendant, contracted the virus in February of 2022, despite remaining vigilant about wearing a face mask. And then she developed long COVID symptoms, including difficulty breathing, fatigue, brain fog, loss of balance, and eye twitching. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, almost 1 in 5 U.S. adults who have had COVID continued to have long COVID symptoms in June. Diane Keller Wood has seen a long list of providers, including an ear, nose and throat doctor, a neurologist, a physical therapist, a psychiatrist, and an ophthalmologist. According to a study conducted at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, for about a month she experienced suicidal ideation, which is more common among people who have had COVID. Diane Keller Wood described it as the worst despair you have ever been through, with really no reason. Dr. Ziad Al-Ali, clinical epidemiologist at Washington University, who has studied the impact of the virus and long COVID on people's mental health, said, "People with COVID-19 unfortunately have a much higher risk of having mental health issues." She said the psychiatrist prescribed Diane Keller Wood a mood stabilizer, which helped me tremendously. Keller Wood also connected with a member of a COVID survivors support group who recommended she try the over-the-counter drugs Pepcid and Zyrtec, which studies have shown can help with some COVID symptoms. She said they helped ease Keller Wood's brain fog, but some days she still has trouble forming words. She said, "If I can just have quality of life and see some improvement, I think I will remain positive, but I don't know what my life is going to look like 10 years down the road." Another challenge is a lack of therapists and psychiatrists. According to Kaiser Family Foundation data, more than a quarter of the U.S. population lives in an area where there is a shortage of mental health providers. Dr. Ziad Al-Ali said, "To address the swell of mental health problems, we need to be creative." He said that could mean the healthcare system forming support groups and social workers providing mental health care. Dr. Ziad Al-Ali added, "The government has to do a whole lot more, and also the public has to be aware of this and restore some social ties and restore some sense of normalcy of checking on each other." Tim Bostwick, an opera singer and doctoral candidate in music at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, is working on a creative solution for his post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. He had never had significant anxiety or depression before being hospitalized for COVID in spring of 2021 and developing long COVID symptoms. He also developed nodules on his vocal folds, which prevented him from singing for 6 months. He said, "Since recovering from COVID, I woke up with nightmares almost nightly, most of them being back in the hospital. But his mental health has improved because of medications and cognitive behavioral therapy. In public, Bostwick used to panic when he saw others not wearing face masks. He is now preparing to perform for the first time since the pandemic began. He'll be singing at Chicago Fringe Opera," he said. "Losing my voice was like losing an old friend, and we're not the same. We're never going to be the same. There's no going back to normal." He added, "But it's like getting to know an old friend again."
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human beings in the Quran. How does Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala looks at me and looks at you? Have you ever wondered? I mean, obviously you read the verses, you heard the verses, but I mean, have you given it a thought? Well, anyway, In the previous episodes, we were speaking about that, and we will continue. So we were saying, I think the last thing we mentioned in the previous episode is that human beings have the ability to recognize things and to interact with things. They have this rational recognition, all right? So if this mechanism is developed properly, like the ability to recognize and be rational, it will help human beings to know themselves. If I and you put our full thinking capacity on, we will be able to understand ourselves, as well as many other aspects of this universe with which no direct contact through the senses is possible. Because in your brain, in your mind, you can go beyond senses. You can achieve things beyond senses. This is how most of the sciences that we have today are created, because people thought beyond their senses, and they gave us most of the sciences and the technologies that we have today. So moreover, knowledge of supernatural phenomenons and ultimately a philosophical recognition of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala can be attained through this mysterious talent of a human being, which is his ability to be critical thinker. I mean, no other creatures on the planet, or at least in the universe that we know of, to be quite fair, that has this ability to think and recognize Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through a philosophical approach or through the supernatural approach, because we do understand that there are things more, supernatural events or phenomenons beyond our comprehension, or at least the comprehension of the senses. I mean, animals don't understand that. They don't know if there are ghosts or not. Not that I'm saying there are ghosts, which there isn't, but you know what I'm trying to say. As to the desires which can govern human beings, they are under the influence of natural forces in the same way as other creatures are. The desire to eat, for example, to rest, to sleep, to establish relationships, to attract the opposite gender, or to attract them towards the material world. But there are other appeals that guide them in the direction of non-materialistic affairs, which lack weight and substance, in which are not measured by earthly instruments. So I can use these pleasures and desires that I have in a way where I can become really stuck to the ground, because I'm made from it. And sometimes I could use them in a way where I fly to the heavens and reach the celestials and reach for the stars. That's an ability that no one other than human beings have. Now, you can tell just by trying to think over this how special human beings are. So sometimes I think when we look at one another, we have to keep in mind that each human being is a wonder and a miracle of the miracles of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We're not just looking at a person and we just get stuck at the color or the how they look and the shape of their body. Let's look at who they are and give them the proper treatment as the miracles of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Let us take a break and then we will come back.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Now, one of the things that makes human beings human is knowledge and learning, okay? Now, human beings do not seek to acquire knowledge and learning just to conquer nature and to prosper in the material life. Obviously, we don't do that. Oh, yeah, well, half of it, most of it. Or actually, some people actually do that. But let's just be fair. Rather, they possess an instinct for research, discovery, and obviously discovering the truth, seeking the truth, and knowledge in itself, an enjoyable goal for us. So sometimes just me wanting to learn and you wanting to learn is itself is it's a goal, right? Because I get pleasure from learning, and I'm sure you do too. So sometimes when I go listen to a lecturer, when I read a book, when I watch a clip, when I watch a TEDx, when I do all these things that have elements of knowledge, it actually gives me a sense of joy. So I'm not just learning them so I could learn how to hack a PC or how to create, I don't know, how to make a meal or how to fix a car, for example, through YouTube. But I'm saying sometimes we actually just for the sake of learning itself, it's a joyous act. It's a beautiful goal in itself. So although learning serves as a means to embetterment, to life embetterment, to make our lives better and the accomplishment of responsibilities, it is ideal and desired for itself. I hope that point is very clear. So for instance, should human beings perceive a secret beyond the galaxies and understand that even having knowledge about it does not affect themselves, they would still prefer to obtain information about it. Now, I mean, it really doesn't make a difference to us if there's like 1,000 light years from here, there's another planet. It's not going to make a difference to us because even if we know, we will never see them, they will never see us due to the distance between us. But, I mean, should we seek such information just for the information itself? Of course we do. And that's why we have NASA, we have all these organizations that are trying to go beyond billions of light years. Why? Because knowledge itself has beauty. You know what I mean? So we do that. So this shows that human beings intrinsically turn away from ignorance towards knowledge and learning, right? And these two constitute a spiritual dimension of the existence of a human being, is the fact that we want to learn and seek knowledge. Ignorance, we turn away from it, right? So anything that collides with our knowledge and ability to learn, we try to refrain from it. So we're constantly seeking knowledge, even though sometimes we might seek knowledge that is not applicable in real life. But because it's knowledge, itself is a purpose, itself is an aim. And that's why the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam says, seek knowledge from cradle to the grave, because your brains have the capacity to handle so much information and so much joyous and beautiful information. So that makes a human being special and different from any other creatures which do not have this capacity and ability to seek knowledge and learn. We will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave,